You've dropped in on the White Album Listening Party. A bunch of Beatle fans and musicians are re-experiencing the Beatles' 1968 release. In the studio with me are several DJs, past and present, and program hosts from public radio station KUNM here in Albuquerque. We have the lights down low and are listening to the record in much the way many of us did with our friends back in 1968, 69, 70. Listening to it, talking about it, trying to figure it out. We're going to hear many of the tracks on record, too. Let's have you each introduce yourselves around the horn here one more time.
Hi, I'm Travis Parkin.
I'm Lucio Urbano.
I'm Scott McNichol.
Suzanne Kreider.
We also have a panel of musicians standing by with us, both here in the studio and across the country, helping us tune our ears to some specifics about the music and the lyrics.
Hi, my name's John Spurney. I'm a musician and composer in New York City.
My name is Christy Krueger. I'm a singer-songwriter from Dallas, Texas.
This is Douglas Grant. I'm a musician and recording engineer and producer in Tucson, Arizona.
My name is David Gans. I'm in Oakland, California.
I'm Rob Martinez, and I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Finally, Steve Turner, author of the book A Hard Day's Right, the stories behind all the Beatles songs, is with us on the line from London. Steve, we pick up on side three of the White Album now with the song Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey, which I would guess would be the longest title of any Beatles song. What's the story on this one?
Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey. Again, that was about John and Yoko, and I think was about the sort of turmoil that they were caught up in. And Yoko was not really a welcome guest in the eyes of the other Beatles. It was the first time a woman had sort of come into the Beatles setup and not been willing just to be a girlfriend, you know, and to see the Beatle at appointed times, but actually wanted to be in the studio and wanted to make a contribution and even wanted to help out writing lyrics and things like that. And they didn't really like it. And I think that sort of spelt the beginning of the end. The Come On, Come On, Come On at the beginning, I think, was taken from a track by the Fugs called Virgin Forest. There's a kind of a chorus on the beginning of that, which I think inspired that part of the song.
The thing I love the most about Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except for Me and My Monkey is that someone plays a fire bell, you know, a fireman's bell throughout the entire song.
Your inside is out when your outside is in. Your outside is in when your inside is out. So come on.
My understanding is it's the same bell that you hear on Penny Lane. You know, it was just it was like lying around in a cabinet at Abbey Road. You know, just the craziness of someone just taking this incredibly loud fireman's bell and just, you know, wailing on it for the entire song.
Well, in the Beatles recording sessions book, they talk about this song as having been recorded and then they sped up the tape when they made their reduction mix, which means that the tempo and the pitch both wound up being a lot higher than they were to begin with, which gives it that extra kind of frenzied thing. That just brings up one of the amazing things about this record and about what the Beatles did. You know, they were working with incredibly limited tools. During the making of this record, they found out that there was an 8-track machine somewhere in the building, and the bureaucracy had not yet authorized it for use. So they began this, as they had done Sgt. Pepper and Revolver and all their previous masterworks, using a 4-track machine and mixing things down into stereo pairs and then adding more material to it, which makes the miraculous, magical awesomeness of it even more so, because they were able to do this with incredibly primitive tools by today's standards.
Take it easy. Everybody's got something to
Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey, a song that I've always loved. I'm looking up here. Who was responsible for the fire bell? It says George Harrison was responsible for that. Lou.
What's fascinating to me, and I'll listen to it, is George Harrison. A voice, of course, everyone can admire Lennon and McCartney, but George Harrison for his style of guitar playing,
Travis?
Me and My Monkey really was a harbinger of what was to come from John Lennon in later years. I mean, the angst in his voice. When I listen to that song now, it almost sounds like it was something Lennon put out 10 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in contrast to some of the other, the term we've been using, scarier tunes on this album, though, is that there was a little element of joy in that whole thing. Come on, it's such a joy. Everybody take it easy. I like that. Let's play the three songs that end side three now, back to back. Sexy Sadie, Helter Skelter, and Long, Long, Long. Steve Turner, Sexy Sadie is the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
Yes, Sexy Sadie was, if it wasn't actually written in Rishikesh, it was certainly written as a result of Rishikesh.
Sexy Sadie.
It was actually written as Maharishi. You made a fool of everyone.
You made a fool of everyone. You made a fool of everyone.
They thought that was too libelous, and so they changed it to Sexy Sadie. There'd been a falling out between the Beatles and the Maharishi. They suspected him of, I think, exploiting them, basically. They he had ideas for doing a film and wanted to use their name, and there were ideas for sort of taking 10% of people's incomes, which, is okay if you're just a dentist or something, but if you're a Beatle, that's going to be a lot of money. They basically left under a bit of a cloud, and Sexy Sadie was one of the first songs that was completed after they left. Helter Skelter was that was written mostly by Paul as a result of a review in one of the British music papers of a single by The Who, and this review said, this is the most noisy, loud, fast rock and roll song you'll ever hear. And then when Paul heard the song by The Who, it didn't seem like that at all, and he thought, I'm going to write a song that would actually live up to that description. And so he wrote Helter Skelter. And of course, Helter Skelter is a kind of fairground attraction where you climb up this tower and you slide all the way down it, going round and round the apparatus. And I guess Charles Manson didn't realize what a Helter Skelter was, and that was another of the songs that he took as being personally addressed to him, and was a call to sort of hide in some underground caves while the revolution went on, and then come back when it was all over and take over the world. Long, Long, Long was written by George, and he wrote it after, well, not after hearing, but it was certainly based on, the chord changes were based on Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, on Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde double album. Sounds like a love song. I guess it is a love song in a way, but he said, in retrospect, he said it was a love song to God.
Long, Long, Long has never received much notice. John Spurney, what do you like about that?
Long, Long, Long is a song that, when I first heard the album, didn't really leap out at me. It's a very quiet, contemplative song, and I think it requires a little effort to get into.
It sounds like something that could eventually be on All Things Must Pass. To me, just like Sexy Sadie sounds like something Lennon could have on one of his solo albums. But the vocal is really down in the mix. So I think that's why this song tends to sometimes get passed by. But it is really worth a listen. It's quintessential George Harrison.
Can I just say, when I was a kid, Helter Skelter scared me so much. It was like the most frightening thing I had ever heard. And of course, at that time, the time when I was hearing the album for the first time, it was really predominantly associated with the Manson family. And the book Helter Skelter had just come out. And there was, I think, a movie also called Helter Skelter, which were just about, the terrible Manson family murders. And so when I first heard that song, I wasn't really a Beatles fan yet, and I was just a little kid. And, it was like the aural equivalent of a horror movie. It just, frightened me to my very core, you know. And you know, now I just listen to it and it's like, oh yeah, it's like a, you know, a super rock song.
Yeah, for a period in history, that association really tainted it.
Yeah, and it's a shame, you know, because obviously it has nothing to do with that.
It's a great rock song. Helter Skelter's was one of the fun songs we used to learn back in high school, just that descending crunchy guitar line on the first two strings of the guitar. That just got you going all on its own.
Yeah, and that riff, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, is so much fun to play.
Paul's vocal range, too, and his dynamic abilities are definitely in the spotlight. He obviously still loves high voltage rock, and it's electrifying.
Yeah,
and of course the, you know, the Ringo, the I've got blisters on my fingers, you know,
it's iconic.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Didn't I read in the recording sessions book that there were some takes of this that were like 30 minutes long or something?
I've read that. Yeah, I've read that too. And yeah, it's amazing how it just fades out. Then you think you're done, then it just fades back in to draw you back into it.
Sexy Sadie, I think Christy Krueger had some thoughts about it.
One of the things that I love about the Beatles is how they fuse so many different styles of music, whether it was blues or rock and roll, classical music, that riff, that da 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 da, I mean, these sort of arpeggios that are happening. I love that element in the song. And I also like the knowingness in the lyrics, like taking a deep look at someone, like these are, you know, what have you done? You've made a fool of everyone. These sort of more, I don't want to say judgmental because that sounds negative, but these songs that are sort of promoting this awareness of really looking into something, really reading into something, really seeing what somebody's about. And I like that.
Sadie, what have you done? You made a fool of everyone. You made a fool of everyone. Sexy Sadie, oh, what have you done? Sexy Sadie,
thank you. to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. Where I stop and I turn and I go for a ride. Till I get to the bottom and I see you again. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you, don't you want me to love you? I'm coming down fast, but I'm miles above you.
There's Long, 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 Helter Skelter, and Sexy Sadie. Travis?
For me, looking back, I'm hearing heavy metal in Helter Skelter. I'm hearing a precursor to the heavy metal days, and I'm not surprised that Charles Manson would, of all songs, would latch onto that.
It is wild and loud and crazy. I mean, if Paul was trying to create a song that would freak people out,
lock up your daughters. That song freaked me out, man. I'm like, okay, take all your Beatles albums and burn them, man. Because these guys are over the edge. They're gone.
Scott?
Here, at this point in their career, they weren't quite the only ones on Mount Olympus anymore in the rock and roll world. You had they were alongside Cream, Hendrix, the Stones, certainly, and the whole Bay Area scene, L.A. Everybody had really the Doors, so they wanted to play some rock and roll and do some different things.
Yeah, well, this is a great point because the whole scene was about pushing the envelope and doing stuff that wasn't safe. Yeah, they were trying to keep up in a bit. I mean, we think of the Beatles as leaders, and they were because they had this incredible platform that everybody would be listening so closely.
I see it that these guys were growing. You know, they were still young, and they're, you know, look at the way they're taking the different genres, different styles.
I talked with record producer John Leventhal about the Revolver album, and he talked about the Beatles being so eclectic. It kind of started there, you know, because the personalities were emerging.
Sometimes when I think of the Beatles, I think of them as the different components of a single human being, and I think of Paul McCartney as the head, as the thinker, as the person who makes sure the music remains just commercial enough so that it'll sell. And I think of John Lennon as really being the heart of the band, and I perceive George Harrison as being the spirit or the soul of the Beatles.
And Ringo's keeping the beat.
And Ringo, like you say, he was keeping the beat. He was kind of like every man. He was a person in the band that we could relate to that was not quite as godlike as the others. Mm-hmm. He was more like us.
Was he like the muscles?
Maybe so, yeah. He was the physical body of the band,
yeah,
if you
yeah.
will. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Side 4 awaits us now. You're listening to the White Album Listening Party. I'm Paul Ingalls. Back after this break.